Welcome to Sprinkle with Hope and your host, Shane. Today we have an incredibly inspiring guest. Kathy Tocaro talks to us, and she talks about the sexual and physical abuse that she went through when she was very young and just had that hopeless life, and she has completely turned it around. You truly do not want to miss this episode.
She is so inspiring, and there's so many nuggets that she gives. It was almost hard to unwrap all the things that she talked about. But yes, she did talk about some difficult things, you know, from her childhood that she went through and through, you know, her young adult life that, you know, that could, you know, could affect some people. So, you know, she does talk about sexual abuse and, you know, drug abuse and things that she went through. But seriously, such an inspiring story. Please listen in. She is amazing, Kathy Tocaro.
Welcome to the Sprinkled with Hope podcast.
This is Jason.
And this is Shane.
And it's podcast time.
Welcome to Sprinkle with Hope and your host, Shane. And today we have an incredible guest. We are so happy that she's joining us. Kathy Tocaro, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
You know, Kathy, I watched a video of her, it's probably been 2 months ago, and it really touched me. And I thought, oh my gosh, we have got to get her on our show. So we reached out to her actually this week, and she said, yeah, I need to be on your show. I'm going to read something from her website just to give you a little bit of background about where she has come from, and then we'll talk about where she is now. But she says, from a life of sexual and physical abuse to a life of hope and change. And I loved that she's talking about the change that she is right now. Those things that you've gone through, Kathy, are tough. I don't know how much you want to talk about that. But maybe give our listeners just a little bit of background about where you were growing up and now where you are now.
Okay. I grew up, I was put in a foster home until the age of 4. And in that foster home, I was molested, sexually abused. My first memory is a hand over my mouth telling me not to scream. And from there, when my mother remarried, they came back and got me, and she didn't know that she married a monster. So there's a lot of family violence, extreme amount of like sexual abuse between me and my sisters. And it was just like, I started running away from home at 7, and I used to sleep in the doghouse because that was my only safe place that I had. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I started having conversations with God, because I was wondering, if you're such a loving God, how could you let these awful things happen? And I just didn't understand. And when my mom finally moved away, I was 10, and things just went really from bad to worse, kind of in a way. She was very busy trying to raise 3 teenagers in the 80s by herself. I mean, they didn't have the resources that they have today. So I was left alone on a lot, and she began to drink, my sister. Like, it was just one chaos. Yeah. I was raped at 14. I was the police were involved at the age of 15 when I was attacked and molested by the foster family initially. I started modeling at 18. I went to Montreal, Miami, New York, and in Miami, I was drugged and raped by a photographer there and told it was my fault. And I really believed that. And I didn't tell anybody. So I'm carrying around even the rape at 14 from my first boyfriend. I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell anybody because I felt dirty. Yeah. And that it was my fault. And so I went back to Montreal when I was about 19 after the modeling thing didn't work out. And I ended up being gang raped there, coming home after work at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the neighbors found me, and they brought me to their apartment, and then they ended up raping me. It was horrific. And I still didn't tell anybody. I didn't call the police. I ended up on a bridge with one leg over, about to jump. Mm-hmm. Not that I wanted to die, but I wanted the pain to stop. Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to reach out. I mean, there's a million people or 2 million people in Montreal, and I felt so alone. And so as I got one leg over the bridge, and I'm just cursing God, I'm like, I hate you. Like, how could you do this? Like, I'm such a good person. Like, yeah. Just why? And what happened is, as in the middle of cursing God, a man approached me, and he had this aura of light and love around him. And he just pulled me off the bridge and sat with me, and he never said a word, not one. And it was just his whole energy that just calmed me down and was able to start, you know, dealing with thinking anyway. And he just walked me off the bridge. And the strangest thing was that this bridge in Montreal, it's there's nobody around. And at the base of the bridge was a cab waiting for me. Like it was wow. Like surreal. Yeah. So he put me in the cab and told the driver to bring me to the hospital. And I ended up leaving after a week and having too much pain and flashbacks, still not telling anybody. I swallowed a bunch of pills, unable to cope. I ended up getting my stomach pumped. And the most interesting thing happened there. While I'm laying in the hall, and it was so humiliating, getting, you know, things coming out. And a woman her daughter was dying in the room next to me, her young girl my age, and she was literally at her last moments. And the mother of the woman of the daughter came to wash my face and take care of me, because wow. She couldn't do something for her daughter. And the love that transpired between the two of us gave me hope.
Yeah.
It's that one moment, that one kind act of kindness, when she's washing my face and asking me why I would do such a thing when life is so precious and she couldn't do anything for her daughter. Well, that moment gave me hope. And so from that, when I left the hospital, I used that love, that little bit of love that she gave me, and I decided to start over. So I left Montreal. I crossed. I took a one-way ticket on the train as far as I could go. I had $150 in my pocket and a suitcase. I said, I'm starting over.
Yeah.
And so I got to Jasper here in Canada, and I did start over. And I became a nurse, and I had my daughter, and things you'd think were great. I had this wonderful career. But the problem was that all that pain, all that trauma was still here inside, right? Yeah. I put it down in that vault, right. Locked it away, saying, you know what? We're just going to pretend that never happened. And I have a great career. I'm a good nurse. Yeah. And I have wonderful, you know, such a bright future. Why worry about what happened in the past? That stayed in the past. How many people go through life saying that exact same thing?
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Oh, a
yeah.
lot. Right.
Yep.
And they just pretend, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. But the problem being, and I'm going to use nursing terms, is the fact that that wound, because it is a wound, because I didn't deal with it, because I didn't even address it or look at it, it became infected.
Yeah.
As any wound would. And it became infected and infected. And the toxicity running through the bloodstream, it affected my decisions. It affected mm-hmm. the way I looked at life. It affected the men that I chose, because mm-hmm. I have zero self-esteem, even though I'm a good nurse. It has right. nothing to do with how I feel about myself.
Yeah.
Right. So there was a conflict there. So what happened was I started becoming overwhelmed by this infection. And having no coping skills, having not been taught anything, right. I began to drink. And that was my escape.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make healthy choices when you drink?
No.
Nope. Nope.
Yeah.
I made some pretty rotten decisions. But the men from my drinking, I ended up having 7.5 years of incredible domestic violence. Mm. And I should be dead 10 times over, and I'm not even making that up. I lived with a shovel on my porch as a reminder of what I was going to be buried with.
Mm.
I was under constant threat of being sold. I was strangled 3 times to the point of losing consciousness, losing my voice for a week, like just the voice box was almost crushed. I was stalked for a year. Like I had a bodyguard watching my every move. Like it was insane. And yet at the same time, I'm still nursing. I'm still working 2 jobs because it was easier for me to take care of your problem, to take care of your problem, to
right.
take care of everybody's problem, but look at myself.
Right.
So, and I think that happens a lot in people's lives when they're hurting, they tend to want to nurture other people because it's just easier. Well, that only lasted for so long. I mean, I was in a women's shelter going to work at the hospital. That's how bad it was. Right? In and out, in and out.
Yeah.
And one day when I was 40, I showed up to work and I look at, I had 10 people to look at. I had my sheet of patients and I couldn't read the words. I couldn't function anymore. I was so mentally exhausted and drained and I lost hope again. I didn't have, I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know. So I quit my job on the nursing station and I ran down to the, I went from the medical unit down to the psychiatric unit and I'm pounding on the door because it's locked, right? And I'm like, let me in, let me in. They called security, get her out, get her out. But that was priceless because it was from that moment when the security guards brought me to the emerge and I saw a psychiatric doctor. It was the first time in my life that I told someone of everything that went on. Like even my mother didn't know nothing. My family knew nothing. My coworkers, you know, they just think, oh yeah, Kathy's happy. She's good. Yeah no, I was a mess. So once I told that doctor, he's the one that said, you know, because I was expecting him to give me some pills, some happy pills.
Right, right.
Kathy, there's no amount of pills or drugs that's going to make this better. He said, look at what you've told me. You have to quit drinking and you have to address these issues. There's no other way. And so that was in 2008. And that was the beginning of my journey of hope. And there's been a lot of ups and downs. There's been a lot of changes. But it's through that journey that I'm able to do what I do today because my pain has inspired others and my transformation, I guess you could call it, has inspired others to be able to look at their lives, look at the rut that they're in and say, you know what? Maybe if I just change my perspective a little bit, I can find, if I change the viewpoint and look at myself in a different way, maybe things will get better. And it's been absolutely priceless. I mean, wow. To even begin, right?
Yeah,
right.
You know, Kathy, that is, I really appreciate that you shared those things. They are tough to talk about, but I think it's important that those of us who have gone through things like that, eventually we have to open our mouth to help other people. So you were given many, many chances to give up, but you never did. And now you're turning that into a positive thing. And I think that's good. I think the hope that you talk about and the change is what we really want to focus on. Not so much the stuff that you dealt with. That's all terrible. But where you are today and where you're going, I think is more important. Mm-hmm. That perspective you talked about. So now you gave up your nursing career and now you drive the largest truck in the world, right?
I know. So cool.
That's quite the difference. So what happened there? How did you get into that?
Okay. Well, I'll just backtrack just a little bit. When I lost my nursing career, I ended up on the couch. For 3 days, I couldn't move. I was so depressed beyond tears. I mean, I didn't know, all my identity was in nursing. So how do you change, right? It doesn't happen overnight. And I waited, literally, I was so depressed. I waited for God to save me. And I laid there. But on the third day, I had a spiritual experience that got me moving again. It was, I'm on my knees and I'm crying. I'm just in such despair and such pain. And I know there's a lot of people out there right now that are doing the same thing, that are just so hurting, looking for answers. Well, there's a song that came on. It was called Another Round. And it was a slow song from the Foo Fighters saying, can you go another round? I will follow you. And as I'm questioning myself, can I go another round? Do I have the strength to get up? Like, I just didn't know. And I'm kind of looking up in the corner and there was a window and a light came through the size of an American dollar, like the two, and it came through and it touched me in the heart center. And there's little stars going in there, like different colors, and they were moving. And the song is playing, can you go another round? I will follow you. I'm like, oh, you'll follow me. Hey, we'll see about that. Yeah. So I get up, I move over. The light never left my side. It would stay glued to my heart center. And now that got my attention. I'm like, wow. Yeah. Right. I was sober for one, but it was a thing. Right. So I moved from the kitchen over to the couch and I started jumping up and down. The light never left my side. It stayed glued to my heart center. That is when I knew that there was something bigger out there, literally, that I needed to do to change and that I wouldn't be alone. So in saying that, I still ended up homeless. I mean, there was relapses involved. And the ultimate change was a one simple thing, a mindset change. I was homeless for 7 days, completely depressed. I'd slashed my arms. I got really bad scars. I should have died again, but I didn't. And I met a man named Toothless Joe. Toothless Joe, on the seventh day, he slapped me on the back and he goes, "This is the life. Live it. Love it." You know, he's drunk and happy and all that. When he did that, I call it a God smack, because my whole perspective, decades of depression and pain, it just shattered, like, all over. And I saw crystal clear. And I'm looking at my dismal surroundings and the people that were in it. And I'm like, "What did you just say?" I said, "This is not my life." Yeah. I knew there was a bigger purpose inside, and being homeless and drunk was not one of them.
Yeah.
And so, although I had nothing, I made a decision that I was going to do whatever it took to get away from that guy.
Yeah.
So I did. And although I had nothing, I had my mind, I made a decision, I turned around and I went to get the help that I needed. And 2 years later, exactly 2 years to the day, I'm just going to show the people that haven't seen it. See that truck? That's me. This is the first day on site. Okay. I hadn't even been up the truck where you sit here yet. And I'm sitting like this, but I'm actually crying because I'm thinking of Toothless Joe. I'm thinking, how do I go from homeless to this?
Yeah.
Like, it was just surreal. But in order to get there, I had work to do. I had to unravel all the lies that had been fed into me since childhood. I had to learn to figure out who Kathy really was beneath that, beneath the, you know, that you're not good enough, that you're stupid, that you're useless, that you're a waste of skin, you pollute the air, all that negative stuff. I had to figure it out. And does that happen overnight? No, it took time. I had to go through a lot of programming. I entered a women's program for a year. It's faith-based, called Wellspring. And 25 women live in a house, and you have treatment Monday to Friday, 9 to 4. That's all you do. And that's what I needed. I had to pick away at the layers, because there were so many layers of pain. It was unreal. And once that happened, I knew I couldn't go back to nursing. So like I said earlier, how do you change careers? I had to go to a career planning workshop. And this is funny, because I took a 3-day course to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I was 42. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know what I like. I don't know what I don't like, you know, so this course helped me. On the third day, the lady gives me my sheet back, and in big letters across, it said heavy equipment operator. I laughed so hard, I just about fell off my chair. I said, "That's the most ridiculous career change I've ever heard."
Yeah.
I said, "Your test is wrong. I give her back her sheet." I said, "I'm a woman. I'm 42. I'm not mechanically inclined. I don't even like equipment. And besides, that's a man's job." I said, "Your test is wrong." So what does she do? She pushes the test back. She puts one hand on her hip, gives me the look, right? And says, "If only you believe in yourself a little bit, Missy, you'd see the test is right." Oh, and I sat there. I'm like, She puts on a Les Brown. You know Les Brown?
Oh, yeah.
The motivational. Yeah. So she puts on a 10-minute video of him and saying it's possible. And so I went from sitting like this, to think I just wasted 3 whole days. This is baloney. Like, are you kidding me? To listening to what he was saying, that, you know, if you have a dream, if you have an idea, you don't necessarily have to think you're there, but just, is it possible?
Yeah.
Is there a shred of possibility that you could do this? That one sentence planted a seed that, you know what, I can drive. Like, I'm a good driver.
Yeah.
You know, I used to race cars when I was young. I'm like, yeah, okay. So that the lady sent me to Women Building Futures, which is a nonprofit place here in Canada that gets women into the non-traditional trades, such as, you know, electrician, plumbing, heavy equipment. Yeah. And the day I walked in, this is another godsend, the day ExxonMobil, the largest oil and gas company in the world, happened to be there, and they were sponsoring 16 women to take a 12-week course. They paid for it, $18,000 each, and to take the course to go work for them up north. Now, there was 170 women that applied. They were taking 16. Why would they pick me? Because I had nothing left to lose. And I lost it all. So I worked double time. I mean, I went above and beyond to make sure I got picked. And I did. So I took the 12-week course. And that woman was right. Let me tell you, operating heavy equipment, ladies out there who are listening, it's man's best kept secret. It is so much fun. It is challenging. It boosts your self-esteem, your confidence. And when you get on a piece of equipment, you go, I did this. You're like, yeah, got this. You know, I don't need no man. Like, anyway, it's awesome. So I did really well. And out of the 16, they only hired 11 and I got hired. Wow. And the picture on the cover of the book was my first day on site. And I still, to this day, I've been working there for almost 8 years now. Every time I go to work and I see this equipment, the sheer size, I thank God. I'm so grateful. Yeah. Because let me explain, this truck is 2.5 stories high. It's 3,800 square feet. It carries 400 tons. It weighs 1,000,000 pounds of metal, right? And when the box is up, it's 5 stories high. That's wow. how massive this thing is. It is literally a house. So yeah. I drive a house. It's so cool.
That's awesome. So cool. Man, there is so much in there, Kathy, that you talked about that, man, I mean, almost where do we start? But
I know, right?
I think one of the things I want to point out is that you kind of had these angels, so to speak, with you, you know, throughout your journey as you were moving and, you know, every time you felt down about yourself, you had these angels that were there to help you. And that part of your story is amazing, right? That people that didn't even know you were there for you. And that's awesome, right? That you had these people who put aside, you know, the things that they were dealing with to help you at a time when you needed it the most, when your foot was, you know, 1 foot off the bridge, right? And you had all these other things that were going on. That in and of itself is just an amazing part of your story. And I'm sure you're grateful to those people that took that time to help wipe your face and walk you off the bridge. That's amazing, right?
Yes, it is. Even Toothless Joe, the year after I got the job, I started a volunteer thing because when on really hot days, my time in homelessness, my 7 days, taught me that not everybody's there because they don't want to work. There's a lot of other issues, such as myself. I mean, I'm a nurse. I'm educated. How did I end up homeless, right?
Yeah.
So they don't have access to water. So I started Operation Hydration. And on hot days, I load up my Jeep with coolers full of ice and water, and I drive around the alleys and I give water to the homeless. That's you should awesome. See the lineups that are come running just for water because nobody will give it to them. Well, I did that because I wanted to find Toothless Joe to thank him.
Yeah.
I never saw him again. And I looked for that man, right? And I never, never saw him again. So I really think he was put on my path to literally snap me out of my fog, right?
That's awesome. It's interesting that someone like that can do it for certain people. I think it's maybe the where you're at in life and that you might not have viewed him before that moment as a teacher, but he certainly taught you something. So I just think that's interesting. You did mention, or you showed your book, I think it's called Dream Big.
It is.
So after all the stuff that you've gone through, you've written a book, you're a motivational speaker, you drive this massive house, truck. Yeah. So what motivated you to write the book?
Well, becoming my schedule at work at the time was 10 days on, 10 days off. And 10 days off for a recovering alcoholic is it's a long time to sit at home doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And I have 8 hamsters and 1 wheel in this noggin. It's nonstop. So I needed something to do. So something positive. And I figured, you know what? I should be dead 10 times over. God left me on earth for a reason, and I'm going to do it. So what I did is I started giving back to the communities by the Wellspring house that I spent a year at. I went there to give self-esteem classes to the ladies. And then I realized the need, like they were like sponges needing that. So I started going to women's shelters. I started going to all the youth programs in the area. I started going to schools. And then I figured, okay, you know what? This is getting exhausting writing the same telling the same thing. I just gotta write a book.
Yeah.
So I hand wrote the book sitting in the truck at work because we're not allowed electronics, right?
Yeah.
It took me 1 month and I wrote it out. Wow. And then I came back home and from cover to cover it took 1 year to get, you know, everything done. And now the book is in French, it's in Spanish. Caterpillar got a hold of it and they just translated it into Hindi. And wow. I have the Portuguese version on a USB stick. So it's just waiting to get translated into that. That's writing amazing. This book has changed my life. Oh my gosh. It, right on my wall back there.
Yeah.
You kind of see it?
Yeah.
It is, pictures and thank you notes and cards and gifts from people from all over the world from where I go, because I do charity. It's not about yeah. money. I don't care about money. I have my job. My days off are specifically, so I travel to the Caribbean a lot, not to spend in some posh resort. I said, take me to the hood.
Yeah.
I want to go where people are hurting, where it's real, where it's raw.
Yeah.
So that's where I go. And I do it for free. I mean, I go to the shelters. I spend time with them. I go to maybe 5, 6, 7 different schools. I go to community events. I have people set it up for me. I work with Women of Purpose on the island of Barbados. And I go to St. Vincent and Grenada. That's mostly Grenada. I started a Hands of Hope project where I'm sitting in my truck at work. And how do I... You can't change a social structure. There's so much sexual abuse and stuff going on those islands. It's horrific. These little kids, and it just breaks my heart. So I'm sitting in my truck thinking, well, I can't change a social structure. What can I do? So I'm looking at my hands and I outlined them in my truck. And I wrote words of inspiration on every finger and a little quote here in the middle. And I made that my hand of hope. And together awesome. They make angel wings, right?
Yeah.
So I went to all my programs, my recovery programs, and I had the people that are hurting make their hands of hope for other people that are hurting. So they're writing a message to them. So on this big poster back there, there's one in the middle where I'm surrounded in a church. I had 140 sets of hands from different schools all over Alberta and Northern Canada. And there was 138 kids in that church. And what I gave them, those hands, it was like gold. It was absolutely priceless. So I'm standing there and I'm realizing these kids, they can't read my book. It's too much. It's too intense. Yeah. I gotta write them a book on something that they can understand. So I did. In April, I came home, and because of lockdown, I'm sitting at home, the hamsters again, right? So I wrote a children's book in 4 days, and I had a graphic artist make the most beautiful designs. Like it's a spiritual book based on my journey. So it starts off with me in the doghouse and my conversations with God. And then it goes on to the spiritual realm, because in my dreams, I would go to different places and temples in the sky and, you know, unicorn. Anyway, so what I did is I had the artist draw that. And so there's cool. a whole story for the children that when they're hurting, and even if they can't change immediately what's going on, because it's very difficult on the islands, there's not a lot of assistance or help, that at least they can find help, hope, strength inside. Right. And if they can connect with the God, then maybe it's something. So that book is also in French and Spanish, and I give them for free. I don't even have a publisher for that. I didn't want one, because I mean, who's going to want to give a book for free?
Yeah.
So that one's for free. So when I go, it's a big thing. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Sprinkling hope.
Yes. I love it. I love it. And it's interesting. You know, one of the things you mentioned before was that, you know, it was your mindset, and Shane and I have talked a lot about, you know, it's all up here, all upstairs, right? Like you've got to have your mind right. And, you know, I think it took a lot for you to find that, which is amazing that you did find it. And so what was that like transition, you know, with your mind, you figuring out that, you know, that, you know, you needed to have your mind right to get beyond some of these issues that you were dealing with?
There's a few things, because like I said, there was a lot of layers I had to get through.
Right.
And the main thing is that I understood that sometimes hanging on to your trauma and pain does a lot more damage than it does letting go.
Yeah.
And I had to learn to let go of that. And I had to really believe not in what people taught me to believe. I had to learn to believe in the person I wanted to become, and knew that I had a bigger purpose in life and not that. I just had to find it. And you got to think that your mind is always going to believe what you feed it.
Yeah,
you know, totally. If you feed it negativity and oh, because I did that a lot, that I've always felt that I wasn't good enough, that I was worthless, that I'm, you know, useless. Well, that's what I believe. When you learn to flip that switch in your head, if you feed it faith, if you feed it hope, if you feed it love, if you feed it kindness, that is what slowly permeates is the right word. You know,
yeah.
And I had to let go of habits, old habits that were dragging me down. I had to find new habits, create new things for myself. And nobody else but me could do it. I waited for a long time for someone to save me. I really did. And until I realized, you know what, Kathy, no one's going to save you but yourself. You have to find the strength and the courage and the voice to be able to stand on your own two feet and make that change.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
That was really cool. I think it is a mindset, but I think also with your case, you have to take action to change things in your life. You can't just sit there and think, oh, this, my life is going to change without doing anything. In your case, you go above and beyond. You're helping the homeless and the needy and poor in other countries. And you're taking action. Jason and I talk a lot about that if we really want something, we have to go and get it. Often we can't just sit there and wait for it to happen. So
yeah.
For me, Kathy, you are so inspiring. And it's not just what you're saying, but what you're doing. You know, I think you have taken a life that could have been viewed as just a horrible thing, and you're making it a life of beautiful things, and not just for you, but for other people. So I really feel so inspired by you. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much.
Thank you. I guess the biggest thing is that I had to learn that if I didn't make time for my wellness, like taking that year off of life and forgetting about everything, but focusing on myself, that if I didn't do that, I would remain sick. Yeah. Like when I say sick, not physically sick, but just mentally, just I had to take the time for my wellness. I really did. And I say that to everybody when I travel, whoever I work with, is just that you have to learn to step away from your family, step away from your kids, from your loved ones. And you really need to set those boundaries and take time for you, because you are number one. And I learned that the nursing, taking care of everybody else but me, well, look where that got me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had to. So today, this is very, it's a priority for me, the self-care, that when I'm tired, you know what? I'm tired. I'm just not doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't feel obligated to say yes. Like, yeah, no. Right. And I don't need to give an explanation either. Yeah.
No, you don't.
Know? No.
I really think that I've mentioned before, you know, with my audience, you know, with our audience that self-care, you spend the most time with yourself. So why don't you treat yourself the way that you should? Why don't you talk to yourself the way you should? Give yourself positive words instead of feeding your mind all this negativity, right? I mean, we're already bombarded with negativity. We don't need to add extra. We've already got enough from outside sources telling us all this negativity. We don't need to do that to ourselves. And so I'm with you. I'm all about this there. And I think it's really, really important that we do take care of ourselves, our mind, get ourselves right before we start trying to fix everybody else, you know?
Something that's important is that people go through a lot of PTSD, and I mean, myself included, I had a lot, but the key to that is basically talking yourself through it, right? Because it's not that happened in the past. I'll give you a prime example of how I empower myself. The first month I'm driving this mammoth of a house, of a truck, right? And I'm still shaky with my self-esteem. And I'm like, oh my God. So I got asked to bring this truck into the maintenance department. And at the time there wasn't any lights. Mine was just starting. So I had to call ahead and get security to block off both sides of the road so that little pickups, which look like little dinky toys, right?
Yeah.
So that the pickups wouldn't go, because I'm coming through. So, and the sound these things make, it's just incredible. Anyway, so as I'm coming about, I'm approaching the intersection. Now there's a lineup of pickups this way, a lineup of pickups this way. You got security at both entrances. There's people. It was a beautiful day. People are getting out of their trucks. They're having a cigarette. They're looking up at this house and just listening to the sound. And the tires are 14 feet high. Right? Yeah. I'm 5'6". Like, it's massive. Anyway, so as I'm approaching this intersection, I got the worst post-traumatic flash ever. It hit me from behind. It was like a tidal wave is the only way to describe it. It went like, whoosh. It knocked the breath out of my lungs. And I couldn't breathe. I started to like hyperventilate. And I'm seeing the most humiliating, horrific images of my past.
Yeah,
that's all I could see. I couldn't see the road, and I'm driving this house, right? I think I need to see the road. So I'm driving, and I'm like, and I'm trying to catch my breath, and it was to the point where I could almost see the words of, I could hear voices, you useless, you're stupid, and all this stuff. And so what I did, as I'm trying to gain my breath, I went, oh, heck no. My past does not define my future, right? So what I did to empower myself, I rolled down the window and I kind of took this imagine, all these things that I was seeing, and I threw it out. But when I did that, I had this gaping hole inside. And it was hurting. It's like this, I had this hole and I had to fill it with something positive, right? I got rid of the negative, replace it with something positive. And so I did the only thing I knew how. I'm in the middle of the intersection. I felt like I was in a parade. So I did the queen wave.
That's great. Awesome.
And I'm waving. I'm like, I'm blowing kisses. And I'm like, hey, Daffy, how are you?
Oh, that's great.
That's rich.
It was awesome. It was priceless. Because that moment, it gave me my power back. You know, and it was a defining moment, because had I not talked myself through that and not understood that my past isn't what I am today, it isn't anything that anybody led me to believe. I am the master and commander of my own ship. I do what I think is right. And I am not letting that drag me down. So if I wouldn't have done that, I could have easily just sunken into that, you know what, you're right, I'm not good enough, and you know that old pattern. And I'm like, no, I broke those patterns, I broke those chains. So
that's awesome.
Such a great story.
That's awesome. That is a great story.
That's really cool. Kathy, you have really shared some amazing things. I am seriously inspired. We're going to give you the opportunity to answer two questions Jason and I have come up with, what we call the double down dose.
Double down dose.
You ready for this?
Okay.
So we talk a lot about hope, but we want to know how you would define hope.
Oh my gosh. Hope is my breath. Hope is almost like the wind in blowing in the trees. Hope is the beauty of the flowers shining. Hope is the love and the smile and the laughter of a child. Hope is what will uplift you in the most defining moments of your life. Hope is an inspiration. It's the faith. It's the knowing that something throughout the most darkest times is going to pull you out. But ultimately, I think hope is the answer to a lot of unanswered prayers, that it's that step that you need to cling on to. It's that, what do you call it? That lifeline. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lifeline. That's one word.
That's awesome. Wow. It's so awesome to just get people's different take on hope. You know, we ask all of our guests these two questions, and that was awesome. That's all I can say. So the second part of the double down dose is, what is your definition of love, or how would you define that?
Oh my, I think love is so misconstrued in this day and age. It's so contorted. Yeah. To me, love is, number one, forgiveness. Love is forgiveness. It is being able to see the beauty in even the ugliest moments. Love is something that's going to empower you to keep moving forward in life. It is not, love is not abuse. Love is not anger. Love is not jealousy. It is not greed. It is not lust. It is learning to be who you are. See that light inside, that divine spark that we all have, but we just don't see it. Love is being able to do things without expecting something in return. Love is the golden key to change and growth and happiness.
Mm.
Again, oh, Kathy, you are
inspiring.
Yeah, very inspiring. I have to admit, those of you who can see this video, when you showed the pictures behind you, the very first thing I saw was love.
Yeah.
Oh, it is on my wall.
I really did. Like, there are a lot of pictures, but I instantly saw love. And I thought, you know, that defines who Kathy is, who I think you always have been. You just didn't know about it back when you were younger. But now you're really starting to blossom into who you really are, and you're becoming such an inspiration to the world. I sincerely appreciate the time that we've had to talk today. I am very inspired by your words and your actions. So Kathy, thank you so much for what you've shared with us, and keep sharing that light.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. Oh my gosh. Thank you for inviting me to be a guest.
Seriously, you're such an inspiration. And you know, I want to let you, Kathy, know, as well as our listeners, you are loved, you are needed, you are worth it, and you are worthy of anything that you want and desire. And, you know, we tell our guests that, and we tell our audience that as well, is everybody has worth. Mm-hmm. And your worth isn't defined by your past. And so, you know, you were born with worth. You didn't have to do anything to find that worth. And so for me to you, you are worth it. I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you took this time to talk to us and really inspire, you know, Shane and I, as well as hopefully, you know, the people that listen to your message today. I think it's amazing, and it's timely for sure.
Thank you so much. It's been such a blessing to be here. Thank you. I really appreciate it.